What's up, guys? We're back here with our third episode. I'm Andrew.
I'm Jason.
And this is the best episode you'll ever hear.
All right, guys. We are here with the literary analysis. So we're just going to talk a little bit about Billy's life with his family and just around the house after the war. All right. So throughout the reading, I found this quote. It says, Billy had to miss his wife's funeral because he was still so sick. He was conscious while Valencia was being put into the ground in Ilium. Billy hadn't said much since regaining his consciousness, hadn't responded very elaborately to the news of Valencia's death and Robert's coming home from the war, and so on. So it was generally believed that he was a vegetable. There was talk of performing an operation on him later, one which might improve the circulation of blood to his brain. Actually, Billy's outward listlessness was a screen. The listlessness concealed a mind which was fizzing and flashing thrillingly. So here, there's these two major, major events in his life.
Mm-hmm.
Where his wife passes away and his son comes home from the war where he was gone for a very long time. And he just has no emotional response to either thing. And that's very strange.
Yeah.
Because usually you'd expect a huge outburst of sadness, first of all, for when his wife died, but happiness when his son came home from the war, and you just don't get that here with Billy.
Yeah, so I'd say we kind of, you know, saw these events, and it was obviously kind of asked, like, you know, why. And I think Vonnegut, you know, puts these events and the reactions from Billy in here throughout the whole book, he's been, you know, using these events to kind of demonstrate how Billy reacts and his lack of emotion for a lot of, you know, things we'd say are kind of radical big events in his life. And he continuously does that to show the emotional effect, you know, that the things that Billy has gone through have had on his, you know, on his life and certain events.
I kind of find it, like, I mean, not funny, but, like, I mean, Valencia, she gets in a car wreck on the way to see how Billy's doing, and then she makes it all the way there to the hospital and then just dies in the parking lot. And, like, I mean, Billy made it through his conflicts and didn't lose himself or any of his family. I mean, besides his father, which was before that. But he makes it through, and Valencia dies waiting to see Billy to see if he's either a vegetable or going to die.
Right. Yeah, and the way she dies is just kind of weird. Like, she got in a car accident. Everything was fine, but her exhaust fell off.
Yeah.
And then she died of carbon monoxide, I think it is, from not having the exhaust, and all the air got into her car. And obviously it's not funny exactly, but it is kind of Vonnegut's way of using humor.
Yeah.
To show that. And then again, I think the reason that Vonnegut puts all this into the novel is definitely to show the effects of the war on soldiers, but it also shows, like, it also points out the realistic things in this novel. Like, obviously there's some crazy things like aliens and all that, but then there's these super real life things like that make it more of a real type situation kind of thing.
Yeah, and like you said with the real life situations, Vonnegut says on Charles Amador, says Billy a pilgrim, there isn't much interest in Jesus Christ, the earthly figure who is most engaging to the Charles Amadorian mind. He says is Charles Darwin, who taught that those who die are meant to die, that corpses are improvements. So it goes. So this is, you know, I thought it was really interesting. It kind of brought to my mind, like, you know, why did Vonnegut kind of go from, you know, this, you know, death scene to talking about, you know, Jesus and Charles Darwin with the aliens. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the beliefs of Charles Darwin and Jesus are super contrasting. So,
yeah,
that's definitely like a weird, like, thing to put in there.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I found in chapter 10, I found an interesting quote. It says, "And every day my government gives me a count of corpses created by military science in Vietnam." So it goes, "My father died many years ago now of natural causes." So it goes, "He was a sweet man. He was a gun nut, too. He left me his guns. They rust." So, like, what he's saying there, which I kind of find interesting, is his father, he collected guns and had a lot of guns. And when he died, he gave him the guns to have. And for Billy being the war and his son, he just, I mean, war is all about guns and ammo and everything that's used to kill the enemy. And, like, you kind of have a connection with your weapon because it's either life or death for you. It's how you defend yourself. And you just, like, Billy just lets it sit there, and it's kind of shows, like, his view on war, how he doesn't support it or anything, or he thinks it's not a good idea and must be avoidable by all costs.
Yeah, I would say another point you can make with that quote is that, like, everything dies at some point. Like,
right, yeah.
His father died, and then the guns that he gave him are now rusting, and they're dying,
yeah.
Obviously, so.
Yeah, I think that's pretty important what you're saying.
Yeah, and then you could kind of relate that to the quote that you said, Jason, with Jesus and Charles Darwin. It's obviously either you believe one or the other,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, and how they emphasize the Darwinism, and how, you know, when you die, you're meant to die. There's, you know, there's no...
Yeah, like survival of the fittest.
Yeah, exactly.
That's definitely what war is. I mean, it is survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point there, Don. Good point.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So, thank you guys for listening to the, you know, a quick little literary analysis of Billy's experiences at home and with his family after the war. Stay tuned.
Hey, guys. Stay tuned for a wonderful interview with the beautiful Mrs. Reese.
All right. What's up, guys? This is Jason. I'm back. I'm with my mom, Sherry Reese. And I'm with her today because of her knowledge with current politics, the current financial situation going on in the country. And she's also, I'd say, pretty well-experienced with, you know, the kind of social, financial situation. She grew up, I'd say, in, you know, would you say it was the lower end of the stick?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I'd say now she, you know, would you describe yourself like
middle class?
Pretty absolutely. Well middle off, class. You know?
No, not well off. Middle class, for sure.
Yeah, but...
For sure.
So, in Slaughterhouse-Five, there's actually a quote that says, "Trout, incidentally, had written a book about a money tree. It had $20 bills for leaves. Its flowers were government bonds. Its fruit was diamonds. It attracted human beings who killed each other around the roots and made very good fertilizer. So it goes." So this kind of stuck out to my group when we were reading. We thought this would be a great topic, kind of discuss money and you know, to be more specific, money being the root of all evil. So, Mom, what would you say, you know, what are your feelings about money kind of being, you know, quote unquote, the root of all evil, just based on what you've experienced?
So I was thinking about how to put it into something that you would understand. So an average minimum wage worker makes $7.25 an hour. That's the current minimum wage that hasn't gone up since 2009. So that person that make $7.25 an hour, if he worked 40 hours a week, makes about $15,000 a year.
Right, and that's definitely nowhere near, you know, essential.
Do you know what your school tuition is a year?
Yeah.
It's just a little less than that.
Yeah.
So there's no way that a person that's making minimum wage could send their child to St. Rita.
Right, or anything kind of close, you know, without a lot of ton of help.
No, so think about that person's children and the obstacles they're going to face trying to get a better education to go to college and make something of themselves.
And you experienced that firsthand.
Absolutely. My mom was on welfare. That's what we lived on growing up. And I was very lucky and, you know, met your dad and was able to go to college.
Mm-hmm.
But not every child has that opportunity. And the government doesn't help
the situation. At all. And like you were saying with college, you weren't even able to, like, you know, after high school go. And it's more once you establish our family, got a good job, now it's like now you're in college. And that's obviously because of money.
Right, absolutely. And even though there's grants available to children who are unprivileged, not everybody has the opportunity to do that. A lot of kids have to work to help support their families.
Yeah.
And they don't always have the opportunity to better themselves. And I think the government needs to put more money into funding programs to benefit kids like that.
Mm-hmm.
Especially sending kids to, say, Rita, you know, where you're going to have some advantages of scholarships just based on where you go to school and your academics. And that's not available to a lot of underprivileged families.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say I definitely agree with that. Whether it's, you know, just whether it was in the 90s to especially now with a lot of the laws being passed, you know, it's just you see all these stats and it's just like how the top, I don't know what the specifics are, but it's like the top, you know, 1 to 5% of guys in the country hold way too large of a, you know, a sharehold in the country's wealth. I think this is just kind of ridiculous. I think you definitely agree.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I read something from Bernie Sanders that said CEOs make like 300 times what an average worker makes.
Yeah,
that's insane to me.
Yeah. To go along with the tax cuts that they get, it's just...
Absolutely. While we're paying more.
Yeah, they get paid way more and have to pay way less in taxes. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and then their children benefit from going to private schools and Ivy League colleges, and then they just benefit from their parents, basically. And while normal working class families struggle, and those kids have to work their way up.
Right. I'd say, I'm sure, obviously, you know, I know you do lots of research. I'm sure you're pretty updated with the college scandal that's been going on. So, what do you feel? How do you feel that plays into this? Like you were saying, pretty much.
Again, I think it's been going on for a lot longer than we've known about. I mean, money talks, and that's how it's always been.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that sometimes just who you are is going to get you into a college faster and easier than the average Joe.
Yeah. So. Yeah, and it's like, it's crazy how you see it just growing up when you pay more attention of it. You see, like, when you're growing up, everybody tells you to go to college to get a job, and it's like, what are you getting a job for? And everybody's like, well, you got to get the job that gets more money. And it's kind of, I don't know if it's, you know, sad. It's just how everything in this country is based on, you know, greed and how much money you have to make to survive. And I think it's ridiculous. I know for sure you definitely agree with that.
Yeah, well, the cost of living keeps going up and salaries keep staying stagnant.
Yeah, definitely.
If we don't do some major labor reforms, that's going to continue and there will be no more middle class.
Exactly.
So we're going to be
screwed. Yeah, and the middle class really is the necessity, is the basis of this country and what keeps it going.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the consumers, you need them.
Pretty soon there's going to be no middle class, and then
yeah.
There's just going to be rich people and poor people.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, Mom, Sherry, thank you for joining me today and, you know, sharing a few words and your experiences. So stay tuned, guys. Thank you.
All right, guys. So today we're going to be talking about Slaughterhouse-Five. And this important quote from the book says, Trout's leading robot looked like a human being and could talk and dance and so on and go out with girls. And nobody held it against him that he dropped jelly gasoline on people. But they found his halitosis unforgivable. But then he cleared that up and he was welcome to the human race. So something I think is significant about this quote is that you can kind of relate it to celebrities today. And they do a lot of really terrible things, but they can always back it up with their popularity and their status. You hear about it all the time. Recently, a rapper, 6ix9ine, was put into jail, but people still listen to his music. Another thing with R. Kelly, he was accused of rape and a bunch of terrible things, and he's still kind of let off the hook for his music and his status quota. So, Mr. Huff, do you have any insights on this?
Yeah, it's true that we tend to, once people become part of what we like to admire and enjoy, it's hard for people to believe things about them could be wrong or off-putting. And, there's also like a question of when does, how do you balance the scale of someone's important as an artist, someone's importance as an artist and their work versus what they've done and the rest of their life. In the case of someone like R. Kelly, seems like the scale is tipping the other way. People are starting to realize maybe we shouldn't even play his music because he's a serial rapist of teenage girls. And I tend to agree with that when it comes to R. Kelly. The harder example
is Hillary and Vic Aguilar. Please come to campus initiative this time. Again, Vic Aguilar and Matt Dunwoody, please come to campus initiative this time. Thank you.
You could edit that out or just keep it because it's part of the ambiance. But so it's a hard decision. I've thought a lot about this in terms of music to be played at my upcoming wedding. In terms of, for me, no R. Kelly's an easy call.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson, a little bit harder. I think he's equally problematic in his own life. His music is such a part of the culture, it's hard to imagine a wedding without Thriller.
For sure.
But that may be a little different than your question, because I'm talking about like the significance of the art separate from the person. You're talking about using popularity.
It's definitely hard to separate the art from the person
when you get
to that point.
I feel like kind of celebrities are able to kind of do the wrong and then they make a public apology and then they think everything blows over, but I mean, how much can you keep doing and then keep apologizing?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that's there could be a double standard there.
Another thing is President Trump. I mean, there's these things that come out about him, and everybody likes to just put that away, like. Cases where he's been accused of raping women, the Russian conspiracies. Definitely his supporters are like, yeah, that never happened. There's not even a chance that they'll believe it.
Yeah, it's true. It's astonishing to me the double standard there, especially from his conservative base who, and I agree with him, his conservative base that people should have strong values and family values and think those are good values, but he doesn't seem to really exhibit them.
Yeah.
It's sort of surprising to me that he's... I don't think that if Obama had been accused of, you know, paying off a porn star, that that would have been met with the same sort of response.
Yeah,
from...
definitely would have just kind of blown over.
Yeah,
definitely not.
Yeah, so I agree with you on that. Yeah. Yeah, people, I think it's always about, like, interests. What do people really want from this? The values can sometimes be true values and principles that we really hold to, or sometimes it can be masks for interests and power.
Yeah.
And, that seems to be what goes on with Trump.
I mean, you're really educated, you're a doctor of the Bible. Mm-hmm. It's like, what, like, can you put from the Bible, and, like, what do you see, like, what the Bible is telling us to do, and then how, and, like, celebrities nowadays, just the differences?
Well, I'd say the key thing that is the strongest weight of Jesus' biggest sermon, for the Sermon on the Mount, is that the only thing that matters is what comes from the heart. And the problem with our world today is that so much is measured by Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and all those things aren't intrinsically bad, but what they do is they set up a standard of measurement for that's purely surface and about image manipulation. And if you can apologize in the right way and then keep going about your business and keep your image pristine, then fine. But Jesus says, you know, what matters is what comes from the heart. And so if you're really to be a good person, it's not enough even to do the right things, but to want the right things, to love the right things, to really be that, to be the right thing. So is the big emphasis that Jesus is saying. He says that can only come from being transformed.
Yeah.
So that's...
Definitely their apologies aren't truly from the heart. They probably have somebody write their apologies and then they just have to post it.
Yeah.
They don't really mean it.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's almost impossible. Like, if I were to be accused of something and had it went off and blew up on social media, it would almost need to hire a PR firm, because people are going to analyze every line, so it becomes almost impossible to make sure you've covered all of the bases that people can criticize you mm-hmm. for. The whole structure of everything is kind of bad that way.
Yeah, it's a messed up structure all around.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you for your time.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, good luck. I hope it goes well. I hope it was helpful.
Yeah, it was. Thank you.
Nice.
All right, guys. Thank you for tuning in to the last episode of The Baffle Boys.
Unfortunately, we won't be back next week because of complications with the federal government. And I personally have been placed in protective custody due to my family being kidnapped by a ring of crime families. Sorry.
No!
Oh! Oh, Gab!